Well, hello, hello, everyone. This is Tanya Gabrielle, and it is February 17th, having a Mercury retrograde moment. And I'm really actually so excited about this Mercury retrograde. I put a little blurb up on the Facebook page for Numerology Academy because it's been really fascinating. I feel like this Mercury retrograde is quite different in this 7 year. So I'd be curious how all of you feel about it and how the other two this year pan out as well. So it's, to me, been quite a very mystical and, you know, with the number 9 active in February, I feel like the release factor is amazing. You know, so just letting go of stuff and just taking a lighter point of view on life, not taking things so seriously, understanding that everything has its place. We're all here to learn, but we're not here to judge each other. And, you know, just being very aware of the spirituality of each moment, a lightness of being is how I would describe it. So it's been fun, too, because we've had any of you who like watching the Olympics, Clara and I, my daughter and I, and also Clayton, he enjoys it too. We've been watching the skating, and we've been doing the names of some of the skaters. So that's been a fun thing that my daughter just loves numbers, and she's got the numerology gene in her. And so she asked me, oh, well, you know, she likes certain skaters a lot, like Yuzuru Hanyu, that Japanese skater. She really loves how he skates, and she likes some other skaters, and she wants to know what their names add up to, their current names I'm talking about, which is Webinar 5 in Numerology Academy Level 1. And so, you know, the other day the men's competition was on. She said, well, Jeremy Abbott, you know, you told me at Nationals he had a challenging name, and he's had such a challenging, you know, career, and, you know, how do you think he'll do? And I said, well, I don't know. Let's look at the other skaters' names, and let's just see. So we looked at Hanyu and Patrick Chan, who was, you know, the favorite going into this competition. And I said, well, you know, Patrick's name isn't really the best, but Hanyu's is a 10. So 10 means if he focuses on being positive, he can do really well. But if he gets caught up in feeling negative about his jumps, you know, I'm trying to explain to an 11-year-old here. So, and, you know, then he might not do so well, but he has a great chance to really do well because of his 10 name. So anyway, she listened to all of that, and then she's very intuitive. So I asked her before they did the second program, the long program, I said, well, do you have any feeling about it? She said, you know, Mom, I think the Japanese boy is going to win. I think I said, well, that's what I felt too. Let's see. He's not really, you know, he's not the favorite going into it, but I think you're right. He had an amazing, you know, short program. So anyway, he ended up winning even with mistakes, and Patrick Chan just totally, unfortunately, didn't take advantage of the opportunity given to him. And I love both of them, you know, equally for different reasons. But my daughter just, you know, had some fun with that. And so this is a fun time for, you know, just to play with numerology. And if you have the time to even look at birthdays and personal years, personal days, and see how they line up for any athletes that you like to follow. The other thing is, if you really feel drawn to look at things deeply, look at where the number 7 and 9 show up in your chart and in your client's chart. When they are activated like they are in a Mercury retrograde, you know, they do have an effect. So you want to check those houses where your planets or your actual cusps are reflecting those numbers, and check them out, and, you know, see what areas of your life you need to pay more attention to and reflect on. And, you know, it's just one of those moments, I think, where the numerology and astrology have come together in a very profound way this month. So, all right, well, I'm going to open the lines now. *6 is the button you press if you want to get in line for questions. And I have quite a few questions from Elaine today, which I'm going to answer first. And also Jen had a question. So let me start with Jen first. I just actually certified another Numerology Academy member, and I want to congratulate her. It's Beata. So beautiful work in her certification process. And so Jen has emailed me from South Africa and asked how in-depth the profiles have to be in terms of the observations for the certification. She says, is it everything we see, or is there a cap on how much we put onto the notes page? There's absolutely no cap on how much you want to write, so it really is up to you. I wanted you to just bring out any observations that you have. And I don't want you to obviously, talk endlessly about something. It's very good if you can sum up things, but I don't want you to feel confined either if you have some deep insights you want to share about your one of your three clients, right? So really, as long as it's legible and clear and you show, your work, how you came. That's why I designed it the way I did, so you can really lay out the different paragraphs in your summation based on numbers that line up together. So I hope that answers your question, and if not, just let me know. I know you may not be on the call, Jen, but just email me and we'll go from there. But really, it's just a matter of you showing me how you would approach a reading with your client. Okay, so don't put a cap on what you want to write. Okay, and then we'll go to Elaine. Now, Elaine had several questions, one of which is interesting because it's about the Chinese New Year of the horse, the year of the horse in the Chinese astrology system. And she wants to know, what feelings I have about that. Well, I don't do Chinese astrology. I do have an acupuncturist I visit. It's actually a couple from China, and they do a beautiful write-up about the new year. And so I learned a little bit from them, but it's not my specialty. So all I can say is if you can just imagine a horse and the speed of which it moves. So it does in Chinese astrology represent speedy success. And also it is a symbol of movement and travel and transportation. So, before we had cars, that horses were how we traveled as human beings, or the fastest way to travel, actually. So obviously we can walk. There was walking in other ways too, but horses, then came trains, but horses were around for forever. So really it's about a ride to your destination. So from what I understand, this is a very good year to really focus on career and focus on goals. And even if you feel, the Chinese say the horses like to be competitive and they are about freedom and they're about passion. And so the busier you are, the better, because, you can really get a lot done this year. And because horses are also very smart and intelligent, you can really use that, your mind, in a way that is very brilliant. And that actually ties in with the seven universal year that we're in as well. Actually, the whole thing does, because we're in 2014, which is interesting. 14 is a five. That is about freedom, and the horse represents freedom to the Chinese. So, and both of those numbers, five and seven, are in the mind triad, which is about intelligence. And, of course, five is about speed and quick decisions and, being busy. Fives are the ultimate multitaskers. So it does fit in nicely, a lot of what this stands for. I've actually never done the comparison, but because of your question now, I'm sort of off the top of my head seeing some connections here. So, do some reading online. There's some good articles that you can find, and then you can also use your own intuition as to how it fits in with you. The only other thing I want to say in terms of the astrology with the Chinese, their horse, the way they see the horse is in the fire group of animals. So, and fire is, it needs wood to burn, and supposedly this is about the wooden horse. This horse is a particular horse. It's a wooden horse. So that makes it even more favorable, because wood and fire are in the same, they feed off each other, they fuel each other. So the element of being fueled to succeed is really good this year. Okay, and then obviously it gets more complicated because you were born in a particular year, and so you are a particular animal as well. And I did pull up your astrology chart, Elaine, just because you had some questions that relate to your chart. So I know you're born in 55, and that is the year of the sheep. You're born in August, so you are a sheep. If you're born in January, you would not, in 55, you would not be a sheep. So you can actually look up online and see how the sheep compares to the horse and what that all means. Okay, but that's not anything I'm an expert at, so you'll have to do your own research on that. Anyway, good question, just not my expertise. So I gave you all, you know, just a little bit of what I know and tied it into the numerology. But let me go on to your next question now because it is interesting. It ties in something we talked about in the last call. And you asked about, you know, on the last call you answered a question about the sun being insulated or surrounded by planets of other signs. You said that the person had to master the sign that is before the sun sign before they could really live out their sun sign or something like that, dot, dot, dot. Can you describe this situation in more detail? And you also go on to add, does this mean that if the sun sign is in a house where the cusps and the same planets are of the sign before the sun sign, that the person has to master the cusp sign first? Many of the charts I have done, the house cusp is a different sign than the sun sign. Actually, it didn't relate to that because most charts have, you know, an actual sign that starts the house and another sign that ends the house. Very, very few houses are one sign only, right? I mean, it's very rare. So it doesn't mean that. What we were talking actually about with Jackie in the last call is intercepted signs. And those are signs that literally don't share a cusp at all. That means that, for example, if one of your houses starts in Cancer and the cusp is a Cancer, then comes Leo. Leo continues a little bit later in the house, but it's not on a cusp. And before Leo, and then Leo ends, and then the next house starts in Virgo. So the next cusp is Virgo. So let's say Cancer is on the second, starts the second house, and then you have Leo, and then the third house is started by Virgo. So Leo is basically surrounded by two other signs and doesn't actually begin a cusp of any house. So that's called an intercepted sign. And when that happens, then, yes, the sign that precedes it, you know, weighs as well into the equation. Okay, so another way to look at this is, you know, if a sign doesn't appear at the beginning of a house, the other two signs, in a sense, do double duty. So, you know, you have to really understand what those signs contribute to that house to you. So, and it does, there's a whole side of astrology that even, you know, deals with intercepted signs. And if you want to know more about it, you can actually go read a book that Joanne Wickenberg wrote. It's her work that really, really brought this to astrologers' attention. And I believe the book is called Intercepted Signs. You can look it up on Amazon.com and just get that book. It's definitely worth looking at because some of your clients will have this. It's actually you know, not as common as just having different signs start the house, right? So like I explained before. You do give an example that is not an example, and that is your astrology chart where you say that your sun is in Leo in the eighth house and the eighth house cusp is Cancer. Well, that's very, very common. And the fact that you have Uranus in Cancer and then you have your sun in Leo, that's totally fine. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. It is what it is. But what makes your chart different, Elaine, is that you have six planets in Leo in the eighth house. So that's actually a whole different story. When you have six planets in one house, that house is like the focal point of your chart. and it's extremely rare. And actually, you have six planets in Leo, and then you have another planet, Uranus, in Cancer, that's also in that house. So given that, you know, you count that amount of planets, that's seven planets in that house, six of which are in your sun sign of Leo. So absolutely, there's an incredible intensity on that house, the meaning of which, as you know, is about transformation and money owed to you, your attitude towards deep, deep issues, your sexuality, everything to do with, you know, life and death and rebirth and sex, personal growth. It's the Scorpio house. So just think of Scorpio, and, you know, Scorpio is the natural rule of this house, and then you get an idea of the meaning of that house. It's very intense, very deep. And, you know, for you, I'm not going to do a personal reading now for you, but just, you know, what makes it even more intense for you, Elaine, is that these five of these seven planets form an opposition to your moon in the second house. That's a really, really, that's like the major, I mean, when I look at a chart like this, it's like, wow, you know, this is her story. We need to look at this very, very closely. But that actually is not an intercepted sign. Okay, so just to make that clear. Okay, so let's go and look at your other question. Let's see. Oh, you talked about when Saturn squares the Sun or any other planets, does that mean that timing is a big factor in how the energies play out of the planets being squared? Okay, and you give an example of your chart. And so you ask, are the lessons actually learning to wait for the right timing? Well, that's a really good question, Elaine, because Saturn is very much the timekeeper. And it's also the great teacher, you know, the planet you learn from. So one of the things that you ask about, you know, is does that mean I need to wait for the right time to speak or take action or for opportunities to use my own power? No, it doesn't mean that. I never, ever feel like anything in your chart is telling you to wait for anything. Yes, there is patience, but that's different than, you know, that's actually listening to the flow of how things are lining up for you and listening with your intuition. Okay, is this the right time to move forward or should I focus on this first? So Saturn's definitely about building, you know, taking things one step at a time, but it is never about waiting. So I don't ever want you to feel like you need to not move forward. There's always a way to move forward. It's just finding the right, you know, thing to focus on. And the other thing that you didn't look at when you were asking these questions are there actually two things. You didn't look at the numbers, and you're not looking at the houses that these planets are in. For you, Saturn is at 14 degrees, and, you know, that's even more a sign of movement. It's that you can sometimes get impatient because you do want to move. It's in the 11th house, too, which is also about the future, and so it is definitely a house of moving forward and looking forward. So I never want you to feel like you should, you know, just sit and wait for anything. So the other thing is you may be feeling right now like you need to be more patient, and that's all fine. Being patient is one thing, but, you know, and understanding that there's a timing for everything. But it's not to say that you stop in your tracks and not see that there's something that has to actually be uncovered right now for you in order for you to move forward. So don't confuse the patience with, you know, not taking action, because you do mention taking action and opportunities and all of that. You actually create those by your perspective. So, you know, and the reason I bring this up for you too, Elaine, is you ask me another question about Saturn. You actually say when Saturn is in a more harmonious relationship with a planet like the Sun, because yours is squared, right? So you're asking, well, what if it's in harmony? Does that mean that the timing is not a big deal and the lessons will be easier? Or maybe things will happen for them without needing to wait? Well, that depends on many factors. Yes, it can indicate a more harmonious flow in terms of not having as big lessons to learn. However, what I find with squares, I actually really like seeing squares in a person's chart. When I see a chart where there aren't some what we would call challenging squares, there is less reason to act because the tension factor is missing. And so your drive actually is actually derived from having some oppositions and squares and conjunctions in your chart. And also, just to make this, you know, all-encompassing so everybody understands, we're never isolating anything from each other. So what I want you to always remember is that when your perspective is congruent with your values, your chart can be a battery power for you. These squares and this quintuple opposition you have to that eighth house I talked about before from the moon, you know, what you have here is incredible battery power to drive you. So the other factors you want to consider in your client's chart too, when you see anything like this, is their current name, how driven they are, how passionate they are, have they found what their mission is, are they able to learn quickly, or do they hang on? Do they hang on to pain? Do they hang on to grudges? Are they able to adjust their perspective quickly? Are they able to resolve issues quickly, or do they hold on because emotionally they're not fulfilled? So all of these questions need to also be addressed when you're looking at a chart, and that's what you gauge intuitively too when you do a reading. Okay, so I know I'm going very in depth here, but I just want to be clear that when, and I guess the Mercury retrograde is a good time to do this, you know, really, really to go deeply into all the layers and never just isolating one thing from another. So you can't outright say just because one planet is doing something with another planet that it means this. There's other factors to consider as well, is what I'm saying. Okay, it colors it for sure, but it doesn't leave this, you know, this actual, what do you call it, 100% conclusion that this is how this person is going to be. Okay, all right. So then to follow through on the previous question about the conjunctions with the sun, another question that you have is, when planets are in conjunction, does that include if they are within 5 or 10 degrees of planets in a different sign? For example, I have Mercury at 29 Gemini and Sun at 5 degrees Cancer in the 10th house with the cusp of 11 Gemini. Okay, you're talking two different things here. You're talking about if the two planets are in a different sign and they're within conjunction distance, and or if they are in different houses and are within a conjunction. Both of them are still conjunctions. You don't, even though, you know, planets would still be in different signs, like you're mentioning, they're still conjunct. Because in the sky, if you look up, they're still together. So, you know, with most conjunctions, I say 8 degrees, but with sun and moon, 10 degrees, you can even go a little bit above 10 degrees. You use your intuition with that one. And if they're in different houses, same thing. They're still conjunct each other. So that's how I read it. Now, I know that some astrologers feel if they're in the same sign, it's a stronger conjunction and you can go up to 10 degrees, but if they're in different signs, you don't do that. I really am not sure about that. I really actually feel that the closeness of the planets in the celestial scheme of things still makes them conjunct to each other. So, but that's me. So you have to go with, you know, there is some disagreement about that, so I can't just say, you know, this is how you should feel about it. But that's, I'm telling you how I interpret it. And then finally you ask the question, is there a way to tell from a chart if a person is from a different dimension, like an elemental or an angel or star child? I can't even answer that because it's something I've never pursued in terms of a study of charts. So my answer from my perspective is no, there isn't, but don't, you know, this is just me. You may discover something. Maybe this is the direction you want to head into. I don't know. But so I'm not saying that it's not possible, but it's not anything that I've actually studied. Okay, so if you ask me personally, I would say no, but I'm not saying that it's not possible. Okay, so good. So these were a lot of deep questions from Elaine. And so now I'm going to open the lines again to all of you. Press star 6 if you have any question. We have a caller here. Let me get her on. Hello?
Hi, Tanya.
Jazzy girl. Hi.
This is Linda. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
How's Florida treating you?
It's very nice today. It was cold for a couple of days, but not as cold as some other people, so I shall not complain.
Good.
But it's warming up to the 80s. My question is, you know how you've talked about the capstone in various, I don't know about on calls, but in various blog posts that you've done? Do you notice
the letters,
that,
you mean?
The letters. Yeah. So do you notice that there's a difference when the capstone is a capital letter or a vowel letter?
Ooh.
In the difference.
Wow.
I mean.
Oh, my God. That's a very interesting question.
I got more on the same lines.
You do? Okay.
Do you want me to ask all my questions first, or do you want to go one by one?
Well, okay, is it related, or?
Yeah, it's all related. So the next one is the first name more important than the last name? Because the last name is, you know, your family name as opposed to your first name being your given name. So should you look at that letter first?
You know what, let's do the capstone one first, because let's just do that. Okay, so let me just explain that every name, and that's like a single name, has a cornerstone and a capstone. And the cornerstone is the first letter. It's the corner, and then the capstone caps off the name, and that's the last letter. And so what you're asking is, do vowels form a stronger or weaker, or you want to know which is better or okay?
Yeah, which would or have you noticed a difference if the
capstone vowel or okay,
or even the cornerstone? I guess.
Yeah, really interesting. You know what? I've never even thought of that. I just think of them as first and last, but not whether they're vowels or consonants. And I'm just thinking, like right now, just, you know, considering your question, and what I can just tell you from a musician's perspective is, you know, ending, because I've said this, I think, before in a couple calls, is when you end with a mellifluous feeling, which is obviously you get with a vowel where you feel like you can continue. So, like, for example, the name Dennis ends with an S. So it's like a more final, it's like an ending. So for a capstone, that means there's more focus in a way. You know, with a vowel, like my name Tanya, it ends with A, so it feels like it can continue because it's like, ah, you know, it's
right.
Not. So there could be that sense that if a name has more of a mellifluous ending sound-wise, that there is maybe more you know, ability to spiral out, to move on. There's movement there, whereas the finality, and it's not one is better than the other. It's just that one is maybe more focused and direct, and the other may be more harmonious and wanting to connect things to each other, bring balance, you know. So there's more of a mixture of colors. Do you see what I mean? With like, and then there's a more finality and ending with the other. So that's for the capstone, obviously. The ending for the cornerstone. Boy, gosh, I love this question. You know, this is a really, really good question. I really want to think about it. Tell you the honest truth. This is like a Mercury retrograde question. Like, I gotta go deep with this. It's awesome because I'm thinking even of Elaine, who I just answered all these deep questions about, and she's obviously very open to knowing more. And you know, Linda starts with L. That's not really, L is though very mellifluous to me. I like that letter. Ugh. Anyway, I'm just meandering now. I have to consider this question. It's really awesome. So,
but then with the vowels, that have you also noticed that, like, if they have more than one vowel together, like Ian or Elaine, she has the A-I together, or even Louise has three vowels together,
mm-hmm.
and Isaiah has A-I-A.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed anything with more than one vowel? Like, do consonants make more of a difference than the vowels, or?
No, in terms of not making, they just add, they have a different influence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they make more of a difference. I think that if you have a name that really feels more like a vowel name, like you said, Louise is, there is absolutely more sense of that spiraling out. It's very artistic. Then there are other names, like I mentioned, Dennis. Not that these couldn't be artists, but you would want to find it where something just sounds a little bit more focused. Like maybe they're direct. Maybe they are an artist, but they're just focused in one direction. With whatever they're doing, like something very, very specific. They're not necessarily on stage expressing themselves. They maybe would do more research type stuff. So I'm going more from the sound perspective that vowels really broaden how you say the name, like literally you are opening your mouth more, right? So it's like more of an opening, because
mm-hmm.
every vowel that you say is, welcoming sound in, whereas consonants are more final and focused. So
okay.
I guess to make a very balanced name, you would want both. You wouldn't
okay.
want like a very vowel-y type name or a very consonant-like name. Just, only when you have like all three birth names together.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it one's better than the other, if that's what you're asking.
Okay. So it doesn't really, there's not one like more, like if your name started with a vowel, Linda, as opposed to Amy with an A.
I don't think so. No, I just think it brings a different color to your experience of, I think when your name starts with a vowel, which is more rare, it may give you that, that open perspective, because it is an open, like a sound, like Amy, you have to have the mouth open to say that. Plus it ends with a vowel. So it's more, each name has its own story, really. And it's not just the sound value. It literally is, what does the letter mean? And just so you know, the book that I'm going to be, that I plan to write this year will be specifically about letters and vowels and consonants and everything. So I feel like a lot more needs to be done and researched about that, because we talk about the numbers a lot in numerology, but the letters we haven't really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm planning to write about that. But this gives me great food for thought. I appreciate you bringing up these questions, because they really are they're very important, really, because we do pronounce these names. We speak them. We don't pronounce the numbers in our names. We write those down as numerologists, but the actual spoken quality of a name is quite important. So, yeah, I will get back to you on this.
Okay. And then you also, if a name is very equal balanced, like, starts with a vowel and ends with a vowel, but like Anna and Emma, I mean, Anna is actually A-N-N-A, but Emma is E-M-M-A. So,
that's
different too? I mean, that
yes.
would be a...
Yes, oh yeah, that definitely, the word balance is what I would say. Anna, Emma is slightly different
mm-hmm.
because it starts with an even, it ends with an A, but it has a balanced feeling to it,
mm-hmm.
So this is again, it seems to me like this is something you could focus on, Linda, because you seem to have a natural curiosity about
mm-hmm.
this.
It's interesting. I've been focusing more on the names.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've, Rayor and I have actually been trying to study Amanda Knox, and she has three A's in her name, Amanda, so.
Yes, and you got to really say her name out loud. I mean, the first thing that that jumps out at me with her is that is her last name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just say it, Amanda Knox. That X is, it's like a very final feeling to it, Knox. And also it's the School of Hard Knocks.
Right. She has been having some hard knocks lately.
She's having hard knocks for sure. And mm-hmm. and a lot of people feel like she's telling the truth. And she's mm-hmm. just going through some terrible, you know, experience. And we don't, for all we know, it's a karmic thing. We don't know why she's experiencing these things.
Well, we have questions about that. And is the FFF call tomorrow?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, yep. we have some questions about our dear old Amanda tomorrow. But then
yeah,
also,
and if you want to send me her birth info, I can actually have stuff prepared. You know,
okay.
I can actually look at her stuff for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And then the last the question that I had was the do we give more precedence to the first name as opposed to the last name?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, right. No, geez. No, you know, I don't, because especially when you're talking current names, you mm-hmm. obviously would never do that. Now, when you say preference, in relation to what? What are you looking at when
just
you're asking
is
that
it,
question?
You know, more important to look at, like, what the first name would mean. Like, the family, like I've read in some places, the family name is more what you're here to learn, whereas your given name, your first name, is more about your gifts and stuff like that. Is that right?
Yeah, the only thing is I don't even use my family name. So, you know, for me it's a matter of looking at the full birth name in the detail you know, as detailed as you can. But mm-hmm. then when it comes to the name somebody is using now, which is when you meet them and do their chart, that's what you're doing, mm-hmm. you are not necessarily dealing with their family name. So that's why that question is somewhat challenging. I mean, most men are, but a lot of women are not, including me. I don't even use my family name. So mm-hmm. for me, it's both names are equally important. And it's really, since everybody's making this choice at this point in the 21st century about what name they want, it is a matter of looking at the full picture. And because both really do matter, you want to look at the first and last letter, the capstone cornerstone of both. If you really want to go into detail, I'm saying you don't do uh-huh. this for current name calculation, but I'm just saying you've chosen the name Linda Roysom, so you want to look at the L and the R, uh-huh. and what do those stand for? You also want to look at the M at the end of Roysom. I mean that's a letter of mystery, and you know. To me, the M really is the greatest mysterious letter. It's the 13th letter of the alphabet. It's the divine feminine, and it shows me that you're very interested in almost secret things. You know, like what's the real reason for this? What's the hidden motivation?
Mm-hmm.
You have that interest.
Okay.
You know? Anybody who has any M in their name, by the way, would have this. It doesn't even have to be the ending.
My maiden name was Murphy.
Well, there you go. And I'm just saying, even if you have an M in the middle of your name, because, see, remember, the middle letter is important as well.
Mm-hmm.
So some people actually have that middle letter be an M. And that, we have to remember, is important as well. So,
what's the middle letter called?
God, it has a name. That's why I forget the name of it. For some reason, it's like having a Mercury retrograde moment right now, but there is a name for it. I'll look it up for you. I don't know why I can't remember it right now, but
okay.
It's cornerstone, capstone, and then the middle. So for me, for Tanya, it would be N.
Mm-hmm.
So that's literally, now for people who have an equal number of letters,
mm-hmm.
that then they actually look at two letters. Like if you have, let's say you have six letters in your name, you want to look at the third and fourth letter.
So like Dennis, you would look at the double.
Yeah,
N.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I think that was all of my questions. We have, is FFF calls tomorrow then, right?
Yeah, Future Forecast
okay.
Formulas tomorrow. So if you want me to look at Amanda, just send me her info. I can just quickly draw up a chart and stuff. So.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
We'll do that. Thank
great.
You.
All right.
Thank
you.
All right, have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye. All righty. So anybody else, press star 6 so we can get your question answered. And I really welcome your questions so much because they, you know, whether you email them beforehand so I can really take a look and get deeply into your chart if that's what you need me to do, or whether you just get on the call and ask me, they really are welcome because they really drive these calls and they're fantastic. So we don't have anybody else lined up right now, so I guess that means for this month we have completed the call, and I just want to let all of you know that you are experiencing a very special moment. This full moon we just had on the 14th really triggered some very interesting energies, and they are building up now. They really are building up to April. All of you who were on my special 3-hour webinar last week know what's coming. It's big, and it's important, and it's powerful, and it's going to trigger us in a big way. So we have started that ride now, and the energy is just going to build and build and build. And I will tell you more about this in March. I'm actually going to create a video about the event that's coming up for us in April. We do have one more caller. Let me just quickly grab this caller. Hello?
Hi, Tanya. This is Diane Benjaringo.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I wanted to ask you about today's 8 lineup. With the day, and of course the date adding up to 8, and as regards to people that have 8, you know, in their, or 4s, I guess, in their 8, in their 3 main birth numbers, mm-hmm. and or maybe you're in an 8 personal year also, and as far as doing business, I mean, do you think that's a good day to do business for a person that does have 8s? 4s and 8s?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a good day for any monetary transactions. This is 17th, and it's a 17, you know, universal date.
Mm-hmm.
It's both. And 17 is fantastic for those things. Even if you're a 4 and 8, it's actually you're even more drawn to the magnetic energy just by virtue of being a 4 and 8 person. So you should magnetize that and take advantage of it for sure. And if you ask too if somebody's in an 8 personal year or even 8 personal month, absolutely they're going to feel it more. Yeah, I mean,
okay,
anytime,
great.
Because these
good
numbers
news,
speak to each other. Yeah, it's there. when numbers reinforce each other, they expand the energy even further, and that's what you're doing. So, you should feel it more than others. Actually.
I do.
Yeah,
I do. I know I'm in a personal year, and my birthday is the 17th.
Oh, wow.
Today's the 17th.
Oh, gosh.
It's a wired, you know?
Oh, my God, yeah. You are feeling it for sure then. You know, and like I said, the Mercury retrograde this time is really, really fascinating to me. I think there's something very special with this one. So just, you know, the other thing I love about today is, and I wrote about this on my Facebook page, is it's 789, and that's a code. That's being formed because we're in a 7 month and it's the 8th, and then we're in a 7 year and it's the 8, you know, double 8, and then we have a 9 universal month. And so that sets up a real wonderful alignment for us where things are lining up because it's the last 3 numbers, 7, 8, 9. So it's a wonderful day to just either like complete a project or get started with something that you feel totally in tune with because it's fabulous. So we still have enough hours in the day, especially if you're in North America, to do this. So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Diane. Thanks for your question. Yeah.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's nice. We could end on the actual date. I forgot to even mention that. Usually I do. So, well, thank you all so much. It was fun. And keep the questions coming for March. We'll be out of Mercury retrograde by then. So things will move fast towards our April event. And meanwhile, I hope you have a wonderful rest of the month. And we'll speak again on the 17th of March, which is very close to the beginning of spring here in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm looking forward to that. So, and have a good one, good Mercury retrograde, and we'll speak soon. All right. Thank you so much, everyone. Lots of love. Bye-bye.